Just a subtle.
Yeah, I mean, just... I'm gonna bleep that, but... I hope you...
What is up, everybody? Welcome back.
This is the Late Night Motor Club.
The only podcast you care about. I'm Alex.
I am Steven.
And I'm Tyler.
Ignore that part.
Ignore the part that I said that I'm Tyler, or...
No, ignore the part where I just yelled like a psychopath. Anyways.
Okay. Oh, also ignore the part from the last episode where we accidentally mentioned that was episode 9 when this is actually episode 9.
Yeah.
So that was episode 8, obviously.
This is episode 9.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with two episodes 9 back to back.
Long story short, my bad. So that's all that needs to be said.
Well, welcome back, guys. On this episode in particular, what we're going to be kind of briefing over and talking about this episode is kind of the differences between, let's say, the show side of things in terms of building cars for the aesthetics, the show, the looks, all that matter, and then also comparing it to the performance track side of things. So two completely different spectrums in terms of automotive builds and automotive communities. And that's something where we think it's an interesting topic to talk about, given how diverse they are and how different they are, but then they're still just all about modified cars.
Right. And quick pause. I'm going to have to do a shameless plug. If you guys have not followed us already on TikTok or Instagram, what are you doing? Late Night Motor Club.
Oh, yeah. Also subscribe, because we say that at the end, and...
We don't say it at the start.
Yeah,
but
we should probably say it with everybody.
Subscribe, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
If you could do that, that'd be great. I'll give you a handshake at some point.
I really thought when
there's another word that sounds it starts with hand.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, ooh.
Well, with that being said, let's dive right into this.
Diving right into it. Segregating the car community between your show build and your fast boy builds, because there's a big difference.
Big difference, yeah.
There's a lot of guys out here who are coming to shows, and you guys have seen it. You're like, what is this clapped out EG doing here? And then he pops his hood, and you're like, oh.
It's a thousand horsepower.
There's a thousand horsepower K24 engine in here. Yeah. Like, why?
Like, pure sleeper, pure just performance, where it's like these track-oriented performance guys, what they're doing is... They don't care about the looks, because the looks don't matter to them in the terms of what goes fast goes fast. They're going to do these parts, these modifications that are going to benefit them in terms of weight reduction, durable components, performance mods, building the motor, suspension, all that, where it's like they would rather be function over form.
Right. And you know what? I have to... right now, just give my round of applause for these guys, because I have mad respect for these people who just build their cars solely to go fast. And that's all that they care about. They don't really care about the way that this thing looks. And their community around building these things that just go ungodly fast is ridiculous. You have all these dudes out here. And it's crazy. When I said before clapped out, that's how it looks externally. But on the inside, a lot of these guys have these crazy big brake kits.
That would be Keith, my cat, a.k.a. the podcast director. So
he doesn't like that.
Yeah, he'll probably be quiet in about 2 minutes. So just keep it rolling.
But they have big brake kits. They have a whole transwork big axles. They big turbos, sleeved.
Even with that, a lot of those cars, they're like, yeah, there's the clapped ones where it's like they're just abused from track use and all that, or they're just clapped. Then there's also the legit race cars as well, where it's right. Like those are function cars as well. But it's funny in terms of the aesthetics, because there's some race cars where it's just like, why is there a spoiler on the front bumper? Like the crazy time attack, like aero cars, where
right.
There's literally a giant spoiler
coming
off the front bumper.
I saw a TC on TikTok yesterday that had like a chassis mount like taller than the roof coming out the front bumper.
Yep,
that was sick. I love the time attack aero stuff. I love just seeing aero that is like
ridiculous.
In your head, you're like, that's gotta be unnecessary, but it actually like all has like a perfect
the amount of downforce that those cars have are insane. Like they're stuck to the ground when driving.
Yeah,
right. It's like, absolutely insane.
They almost have like Bozozoku front lips.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it sticks out like 10 feet.
Yeah, and some of these guys, they're and that's the crazy thing that you bring up. Sometimes they're like, oh man, I need to shave a couple seconds off my lap time. Instead of adding more power, he's like, oh, I'm gonna extend the splitter by like 5 inches.
Yeah,
and it's gonna grip. And it's gonna get me where I need to be.
Like it's all it's all function and like how detailed they are. Where it's just like show guys, they're super detailed in terms of certain details, aesthetics, parts that they put on the car for the looks. These guys are detailed in terms of technical specs. So in terms of the drag coefficient, just the weight, everything of that nature, where it's like, how can I get this part lighter? How could I get it stronger and lighter? How could I get this to where it reduces drag but also increases downforce, this and that? Where it's like, they're thinking like that, not necessarily how it looks. It could look absolutely stupid, but if it performs better, if they're able to shave off seconds, even half a second.
Tenths of a second.
It all adds up because they're competing. They're racing.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. I want to give a similarity in both car scenes. The guys in the race community, we're talking about like the aero community and the track builds, time attack things. And your Stancy Boy show car guys, or even just the Stance guys in general. It's kind of funny the way that you see people map things out. Because they have it boiled down to a science, quite literally for the time attack guys, but the Stance guys do as well. If you're like, okay, I need a 13-inch wheel, how much negative degrees of camber do I need to fit that under my stock body thing with a pulled fender? They're going to be like, oh, I can tell you how many degrees of like whatever you're going to need to get this thing set up this way.
It's also a bunch of math, but it's like just way different math and like way less math.
Right.
It is. It's different in a way, but then there's details in terms of the looks where it's like the details that people put into the interiors where it's just like the craftsmanship, the details, how like the execution of how everything looks where it's just like the performance guys, they don't have to care about that. They're not stressing over that stuff. So it's like it could look however it needs to look as long as it functions properly. It's fine. But these show guys, the form builds,
mm-hmm.
It's something where there's that extra stress, that extra attention when it comes to how it looks.
Oh, yeah.
That is it's so difficult to execute as well, where in terms of the paintwork, body panels lining up, especially when it's all custom, the interior, like hand-sewn, like the full interior, all the fabrics, hand-sewn, all custom body panel, like all this type of stuff, it varies so much too.
A lot of the like really intense VIP builds just go like crazy, crazy, crazy detail on the interior.
Right.
But with that, I would also say like there's also like the race car track people who do care about the looks like to a certain extent.
Yeah.
We're not talking about you. If you go to the track like twice a year,
it's not
twice every 2 years. You know what I'm saying? I feel like we're talking more about the like super like actual competitive race cars.
Track guys, which is like their weekends instead of going to a car show consists of being at the track.
Like they don't go to car shows.
Yeah.
They go to
the
track.
They could, yeah.
I'd want to see it.
But that I think that goes on to where it's just like a lot of these track builds could be a show car.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But not all of these show cars could be a track.
Most of these show cars could not be track cars.
Okay, so we can even compare. I get most show cars could not be track cars because they're not even set up remotely close. But there are some show guys who even go the extra mile to have forged pistons, rods, do big turbo kits, and build their cars to go fast, but then lay frame static or on bags that it just would never function.
Well, one thing that I want to mention that I had the privilege of being a part of was Super Street's Show Car Shootout, which that was a really cool experience that Super Street put together. And what they did is they combined the show side with the track side. So what they did is they selected, let's just put 10, I think it was 10 people, 10 of us that are like show guys. And what we did is on the Saturday, we went out to Spokane, showed our cars there, competed, whatever, but pretty much showed our cars. And then on that Sunday, we went out to Streets of Willow and actually tracked our cars. And it was
that's crazy.
Full-on experience to where it was a combination of how the car did in the show and how we did tracking the car as well. And the range of cars where it was like a fully built track spec STI, but it was like show quality, but it was a full-on track like race car.
I really, really, really enjoyed that. Are they still doing that, or is that a one-time thing?
They did it for a few years. I'm not sure if they're still doing it. I know. I think they stopped because COVID. I'm not sure if they brought it back. Super Streets, like, I know they've tamed down in terms of their production.
In their gatherings.
As Sam, who was the main editor over at Super Street, now is at Pit and Paddock.
Pit and Paddock
might be doing something like that. We'll see. But yeah, that was definitely a cool experience where the variety of cars where it's like, I was part of that with the GTI where it was bagged, but then I didn't do my stance setup. I pretty much got a whole new, wheel set, minimal camber, meaty tires, all that. So that way I could actually perform on the track. Cause I wasn't going to be doing that with negative 11 with a bunch of tire stretch.
I love that concept cause it's really, it's sick to see like these cars that, let's be honest, like you go to car shows often, you see a lot of the same cars, and it's so sick to see some of the cars that you're used to seeing and in your mind are like full show cars to see like on the track and be like, oh, that's sick. But it's also like this put your money where your mouth is type of thing,
right?
For these show guys who build like track inspired stuff, and then maybe don't see as much track time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's taking 100% shots at myself here because I built a car to go fast and never drives on the track.
I feel like it's still like, never mind. I'm just, in my head, I was like, there's no numbers on it, so it's a street car.
Yeah. Like another good example is my good buddy Johnny, Terminal 7, with the FDs, the RX-7s, the Toyo tires builds.
Yeah.
He built up that green FD, which he'll actually be competing and drifting with it. So it's a full-on actual drift car.
That's
sequential, built motor,
box,
three-rotor, all that. And he brought that out to the most recent Spocom, I believe. And he's going to be traveling around and taking it to other shows as well, where it's like, that's a legit race car.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was at SEMA, and people were like, oh, it's just a show car. And he was like, nope, this is my drift car now.
A centimeter from a wall.
Hopefully. Yeah.
That's why I think like the drift scene, just even forget all of the stuff attached to drifting, just visually, I feel like it's so sick because, I mean, people describe it as like a rolling car show or whatever. But those cars are always like, technically this isn't functioning.
Yeah.
Like this is for looks, and like it kind of meshes both worlds, I feel like, in a good way.
Yeah,
it does.
Definitely.
In a fun way.
Yeah. But you know, it's something that's funny about, we'll say, the modified car scene for show and then for track. I feel like guys who modify their car track oriented and then bring it to a show get more cut a little bit more slack by people at the show when they realize they're like, hey, this thing is kind of like not that sick. And then they realize, oh, it's dedicated for the track. They're like, oh, but it races.
Or like the condition of the car,
right,
where it's a little bit beat up and handle gaps, all that type
of
stuff.
And then they're like, oh, well, I drive.
It's driven.
Yeah, and it goes fast or it has some crazy thing. And you're like, oh, okay. But track guys sometimes can give your stance guys and your show car guys a lot of shit. And then
we kind of deserve it.
And then you just, there's no coming back from that. It just kind of is what it is. You know what I'm saying?
There's
no slack whatsoever.
There's definitely some friendly beef in a way in terms of like show guys or just like looks like shit, blah, blah, blah. And then the performance guys are just like, drive your freaking cars.
Yeah. Right. Well, I feel like a lot of, how do I put this? A lot of the stance guys appreciate the race cars more than the race car people appreciate stance cars, just
completely.
Personally, I think it's because like the stance or show people look at cars as like a piece or a piece of shit. No, I'm kidding. like a piece of art, for lack of a better term.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
Trust me, 90% of them are not a piece of art, but that's how they look at them. So,
or it's like race cars, or track performance, whatever it may be, whatever you want
to
call it,
to do this thing.
Like, they still look cool because they're modified.
Yeah,
like anything like modified, of course, to an extent, looks somewhat cool. It looks cooler than a stock car.
Oh, depending, but yeah.
That's why I said to an extent. Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. I think that's the point there. But also,
see, I find my car and the way that I modify my cars as an extension of myself and an expression of, like, I like to build things and how I can creatively see something different, you know? Mm-hmm. And I definitely can see the track guys, people using their car to fill whatever it is that they need. And sometimes, like, these track guys, it's the adrenaline, the going fast. They're, like, wanting to feel like a race car. And that's why they do this whole track thing, because it's fun. Your heart rate is elevated. You're driving as fast as you can, which, in theory, like, don't get me wrong, as a show car builder, I think sounds great. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of fun and a lot to be said for people who build their car to kind of look the way that they want it, too, you know? Yeah. And
there it's different levels of fun, where it's just like, I have the side where I'd love to have a full blown like race car and like go out to the track just with that car, race it, track it, because it's just like I love racing, I love the adrenaline, so it's just like I know I would truly enjoy that, and having like a freaking extreme modified, just obnoxious car, I think would be pretty fun to have.
But then
the show side, where it's just like I love seeing super well built like aesthetic vehicles as well, where it's just like you could see the craftsmanship, you could see the details, just everything about it, where it's just like, wow, whoever built this car did a crazy good job and executed it very properly.
And I 100% agree with that. I definitely can appreciate a car that's done well and stuff like that. And I also think that building cars for the track, I'm going to say in most cases, because obviously not in all, it's not a blanket statement, but when you start racing cars, the price of this hobby starts going way up.
Yeah.
You can spend a lot of money in a very expensive part, and people be like, those wheels, they're $5,000. And you're like, yes, but I spent that one time. You guys go to the track with $1,500, $2,000 wheels. You crash it, and then you spend that like five or six times when things break.
Yeah. Cool. Everyone tries to make fun of Stance kids, be like, you're wasting money on tires. I mean, I'm not the one with my engine blowing up. So there's that. I'm saving money there.
Yeah.
Well, with the like these track guys, they also don't cheap out.
Yeah,
a lot of the ones that are very focused in terms of performance and making sure their car is set up, they do not cheap out.
What about the track guys who rock XXRs? Because they're like, they're circles, bro.
That's
cheaping out. Don't do that.
Yeah.
They're still the guys that rock reps on the track side, just like how there's the guys that do it on the show.
Yeah. Both ends of those, you're not welcome.
Right. Dude,
unless you're I totally understand the track people who are like sponsored by those brands, and it's like, okay, yeah, you have an endless amount of these if at your disposal. I get it.
Well, also like I've seen it where also a paycheck. Like the drift guys, where it's like they're not going to purposely rock $5,000 wheels because they're gonna destroy them.
But you know which cars are the best? The guys who do it anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was I gonna say?
I don't know.
Yeah, I had it. I don't remember. What I was also gonna say is that the props to the track guys, because it is not just money and spending on the parts on your car. Track days cost money. Mm-hmm. The money that it costs me to drive my car on the street is the potential in tickets and the gas. But doesn't always mean I'm gonna get a ticket.
Yeah. When you go to the track, you are paying that.
You're paying
every time, no matter what. Yeah.
Well, another aspect of it, which is the reason why like I haven't tracked the GTI since that track day with the show car shootout situation, is because how much of a liability it is. Where it's just like I care too much about the GTI, what I've put into it, to want to track it again, because for any reason I spin out on a corner or somebody hits me, that's my pride and joy, where it's like, I don't want to treat that as a track car because I don't want it destroyed.
Well,
I don't want that liability.
With your car, I feel like the front end is like mostly handmade one-off stuff. And that's got to be just extra terrifying and annoying if you have to, like, if something hits that and cracks it, you know. And yeah. You're like, okay, got to rebuild this thing I made
by myself. I was pretty nervous because the show car shootout was in the summertime before I went to SEMA.
Oh, okay.
So
you were like, okay, let's not push
this too hard. So I was just like, okay,
he's gambling.
I got to redo the car before SEMA anyway, like clean it up, new wrap, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, let's track the car since I'm redoing it anyway. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, if like somebody else hit me or if I spun off, I don't think I would have been able to go to SEMA. Like,
yeah, no, definitely. Yeah,
it would have been too far gone to where it's like, oh, I don't have the time to do all that.
That was a risky move.
It was, yeah, but he was a gambling man.
But yeah, in terms of right now, it's like I would build or buy a completely different car to build for the track. Yeah. It's something where you have to, if you're truly tracking a car, you have to have a dedicated car for that.
I feel like all real car people, most I would say, want, maybe they don't plan on ever actually doing it, but at the very least they want, like, I want a crazy track car. I also want a stance car. I want to, like, separate cars for, like, every facet.
Facet, yeah, that they want to entertain you.
Yeah.
Because maybe not everybody wants a stance build, but they want a track build, they want a drift car build, and they want a car that they can ride around on the weekend.
I'm trying to build a donk, dude.
I would say the majority of people that are into cars want something fast.
That's true. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. Most people don't say that they want donks, but that's okay.
Hey, bro, donks.
Power to them.
Just wait, dog. I'll put everyone on. Don't worry.
On the LC.
No. definitely not.
Are you going to... I got to ask. Would you donk and put hydraulics or just big wheels?
Oh, I'm talking about, like, East Coast, like, 30s on a box Chevy, you know? That kind of skittles down the side. that's the shit I like. That is, like...
So tomorrow, what you'll see on Alex's episode is he'll be revealing his donk that he's building for the past 2 years.
Yeah, actually, the 326 wheels and all that stuff is all fake just for a misdirect. and actually, I've
secretly
30-inch work emits custom made. Think about how sick that would be. Anyways, we're getting way off topic.
Work, hit us up. We'll make 30-inch emits and put them on.
If anybody makes those, I will put them on the car no matter what. So just hit and let me know when you're ready.
Wagon wheel Alex over here.
Yeah. But do you guys think, so in this discussion of these two extremely different worlds being technically in the same space,
yep,
do you feel that they are both... never mind.
Wow. No, that was a good question.
I was about to ask a really stupid question. But because historically, like, racing and all this stuff is a billion times way more important than anything else going on, you know. Like, even factory looks, all that stuff, racing comes first.
I would say racing performance is definitely more
popular.
More popular. I wouldn't say more credible, but in a way, it's like... It has more credibility in terms than the show side, just because it's like manufacturers are part of racing, where it's just like you have F1, you have DTM, hill climb, you have very notable like racing structures, to where the show side, you have SEMA and all that, but F1, that's a whole different game, where it's like that's performance and race cars and stuff like that, but F1
is... That seems like a different planet.
That's
compared to anything we do.
even the dudes out here, not that we advocate it, but street racing, man, the credibility in parts, it goes far beyond what you could say here. When we're talking about credibility, Alex is talking about his T-Man arms because they got him the amount of adjustability that he needed. Not like talking any shit, but these guys saying their credibility in parts is like, oh, this shit made 200 or 2,000 horsepower, and it did a 5-second pass or whatever the hell they're doing, you know? And so that's what people are like, I'm buying this setup because I know it does this. It runs this numbers. Yeah. I'm getting whatever X setup because it's going to run whatever time I want. You know?
In that same vein, if my upper control arms pull a certain amount, not the same people, Jesus Christ, totally different people will say the same thing. Like, of, I'm getting this part because of those numbers, you know? So it's just, you know, all different math, like I said earlier.
So are you going to do a track build with Tina Man stuff?
No. I tracked my Genesis once after I put it on coilovers at VIR. Wasn't that interested, so never went again.
Hey, here actually, we're having a track day soon amongst the three of us. We're going to do a mobile podcast while we're racing in go-karts. Comment down below if you guys want to see that.
Yeah, actually, comment down below if you want to see that, because I really like that idea. We talked about it a while ago. We might make it happen. Tyler,
so actually, comment down below if you want to see that.
Yeah. I don't know if we said it enough, but comment,
comment down below.
Comment.
If you, you know. Anyways, back to comment down below.
Yeah, don't forget a comment.
And comment.
Yeah. So
the differences between this race community and our show car community. Man, these freaking race guys really rally behind each other. When they're boy, you got like 10 of your homies, sometimes even a larger group than that. These guys are running 10, 9-second pass. You got like 30 people jumping over the edge, losing their minds.
Oh, for like the,
Because their homie just did a 9-second pass or whatever. Whereas your stance guys, you got maybe like three guys in your garage. Like,
well, I feel like also the stance guys, like the the people celebrating at the track after like a lap time, like you just accomplished something, and like the stance build is like the second it's done, you're not really accomplishing anything else after that. So like everything after that is just like, oh yeah, there it is again. Yeah, you know, I feel like that's kind of
it's nothing new.
Yeah,
yeah. But do you feel like your homies really pull for you when you win an award at a show and you go up to get your thing? Like people are.
I do. Insert the clip of me gassing up Dylan when he won Best Static. that was a good one.
I'm not gonna say I don't gas up my homies.
Okay.
I'm just saying I definitely don't feel like it's 30 dudes jumping over the wall hugging each other because he just made a 9-second pass.
Pure VIP. Pure VIP.
Yeah,
that's all they do.
Okay, one thing I have to say with this is with the stance show side, I would say it's very clicky.
It is very clicky.
It's very high school.
Yeah.
Where it's like you have your different groups, they don't really talk, but then they only talk with each other. They're smaller groups. With the performance side, like you could go to the track, not know anybody there, and come away with
30 new friends. Yeah,
30 new friends or whatever it may be.
Yeah. I will say, again, I'll have to preface this with, it could have changed because of social media in the last 5 years. But on the East Coast, it was way, way, way less clicky. And like for the show people, it was more of a, I think I talked about this in whatever episode where I was like, the community kind of comes more together because they have to make anything happen, you know?
Right.
And
because
out here, it's like there's so much that it.
It divides itself on its own.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just that's
not. I'm just saying, like, to bring up a point.
Yeah, I kind of get you in the sense of like you're a car guy and you want to feel a part of something. If there's a small group, anything kind of goes. Yeah. You know, your boy Jeremy over here likes stance cars. You're not quite into that, but he's the only car guy around. So you and Jeremy, you're homies.
Yeah.
Whereas out here, you have a lot of diversity and things that people like, and you're gonna be like, nah, I don't really like street takeovers. Stance cars.
You do like street takeovers. Walk into traffic, please. Have a good day. Okay, later. Anyways, what were we talking about?
Just a subtle.
Yeah, I mean, just. I'm going to bleep that, but. I hope you. Next.
But yeah, it's interesting to see, especially since like I know people on both sides of things in terms of the show side and then also the performance side, and it's interesting. A lot of the people that are part of the track performance side, they're not all about like posting a bunch on like social media, going after like their followers, posting this and that, where they're just enjoying their life, driving their cars, tracking, stuff like that, where it's like a lot of the show side of things, they're really trying to push their social media game.
Right. Yeah,
I honestly, like, to a certain extent, I don't even understand that. Like, I get it if you have like a business or you have like a goal you're trying to like get out there to an audience or whatever. But if you're like just posting your car, I do not understand this drive for like,
we briefed up on it on another episode, like where personally with me, and then you even said it, if it wasn't for like us being attached to it being like a personal business or a business at all,
and being
like
I wouldn't
be on social media.
Yeah, I wouldn't like, be on it nearly as much.
Like, I treat my social media like a business that could potentially grow myself and build a career off of all that.
Exactly. Yeah.
If I was just doing it to necessarily just try to cloud up, which a lot of people do, it's like...
A lot of people do.
it's the motive. People, yeah.
Right.
That shit's so stupid.
So it's kind of crazy to see, because it's kind of like... We'll touch on the social media thing for a little bit in the sense of like you're watching these people use social media in a different aspect of for the community and to be about the community and be involved in something, whereas they look at it as a self kind of motive thing and they're consuming. Mm-hmm. They're not really like, how can I produce something to change the perspective? How can I produce something to bring people together? It's more so of like, how can I just get, like you said, Stephen, get clouded up in the scene or something like that. That's stupid. But you know what I think is a good transition off of this and out of all this is taking a staple company, I'll say Pinnacle, and I think we can all agree, is Hoonigans, and translating into our current event of a company who bridges the social media use, the race aspect, and the show car aspect all into one. I think they do that really well.
From a media perspective alone, they just blow it out of the park. Like, just... so much content in so many different avenues and like so frequent. Granted, they have like a full team, full staff, all that stuff.
But they set such a high unmarked standard. Precedent. Yeah. It's insane.
To the point where like when I used to watch them a lot more than I do now just because time wise. But like the stuff that they were doing at like the original or I guess the second shop, like Manline and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That was like just... mind-boggling, and in my head I'm like, where do you go from here? And they've somehow maintained that momentum and like just skyrocketed even more, which shout out to all them and all their hard work and all that stuff.
But speaking of Hoonigans and what they've done, how they've affected things, how they've been able to be such a variety in the automotive world,
right,
is them. Sorry. What say?
Shout out that one guy from a video a long time ago. You walked in the background in the Hoonigan shop and you had one of my Street Akuma shirts on. Never figured out who you were, but I love you. Thank you. Okay, bye.
So.
Just.
You had to get out
there. That's actually funny. Yeah. You've probably been holding that in for years.
Years. Yeah. I think it was the blonde guy.
Oh.
The beard.
Short guy. If you're out there, short guy.
Who built the
Miata? Dan. Yeah. Danger Dan.
It might have been him because it was like a short white guy. But who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
Sorry.
But yeah, Variety, Hoonigans, they've done a crazy job. And they have just revealed something. So this is moving into our current event. They've just revealed something that has bridged the entire gap when it comes to cars. And
it's the sickest shit ever.
Yeah.
Anybody who loves cars can appreciate this car.
Should. If you don't, you're not a car person.
Anybody who's anybody, you've probably seen it.
You've probably seen it, and you've probably shared the post on your story.
Yeah, everybody did.
Yeah. And it is Ken Block's Pikes Peak Porsche 911 build. And
the Hoonipig.
Hoonipigasus.
The 1,400 horsepower all-wheel drive 911.
Right. It's insane. Full carbon body, and... by body, I mean, like, this thing is insanely wide.
Dude, right.
Active suspension in the sense that as he climbs the hill...
Well, it's GPS. GPS suspension.
Yeah, it raises and lowers based off last year's stats. And, like,
that's insane.
Like,
Has that already been a race car thing and I just didn't know?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure. The amount of technology that they have into race cars like, they could control the car without being in the car.
Well, yeah.
That's the thing we're talking about. Next level budget. That's some next level budget.
The budget, I don't know if this is completely accurate, but I heard this car took $1.4 million to produce.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I did not hear that either. Honestly, but it's kind
of
worth it.
That bad, like in the grand scheme of things, for like a Pikes Peak car. I feel like
it's a full-on race car.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's an absolute race car. But yeah, $1.4 million. That's like they had no budget limit, which I read up into it and stuff like that, and BBI is the shop that actually built it.
BBI, shout out. They're local here in Southern California.
They are a...
BBL, shout out.
different kind of type of content.
BBI is a insane shop specializing in high-performance Porsches, especially. And just absolutely insane. But pretty much what this build is, there is no budget involved.
Yeah, that's
so it's something where whatever they wanted in terms of the technology, everything... Unlimited potential with this. So they built an absolute monster of a car where it's a body, the look of a 911, but you take the body off of it and it's insane.
Seen it without the body.
Well, I'm just saying, you remove the body and the thing is it's a legit
ground
like
up
just
race car, yeah.
Monster.
It's just a 911 shell on top of it at the end of the day because
it is not a 911.
It is so far, and I think something that we grazed kind of gently over, it is the first all-wheel drive, like 911 in this configuration whatsoever. They just aren't like this.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's the most powerful configuration of that flat six motor because it's a flat six motor.
You're looking at a mid-engine all-wheel drive car. Like, can we fathom that? It's shooting an axle to the front. You get what I'm saying? Because there's an engine in the back. Usually when you see an all-wheel drive car, the engine sits in the front. It shoots, obviously, the axle's in the front, spin the wheels in the front, and then it has a drive shaft that goes to the back. But you have a mid-engine car, an engine that sits in the back of the car that's got two axles in the rear and then has a trans tunnel for a drive shaft that spins the front two wheels.
Yep.
That's insane. And something that I kind of overheard in another video around Hoonigans, it was DDE's video, and I heard Brian Scotto say that the transmission tunnel they have nicknamed, I think they called Chorizo, because it's a little spicy, because you have a trans tunnel that has
right next to you.
Yeah, right next to you that just kind of
burns your leg off.
Holds a freaking drive shaft.
That's sick.
That's spicy.
I saw
a little spicy.
I saw the first two pictures of it that they shot like in the studio.
Yeah.
And because it was in the studio, I was like, oh, that's a cool render. I was like, that's crazy.
And
then I
like,
literally, the next post, I scrolled down, I saw like
the reveal party.
Yeah. And I was like,
oh, shit.
This is the coolest car I've seen in like ever. I don't know.
So what's cool about it is where obviously everybody have seen like the partnership with Audi.
Right.
With Ken Block. So it's something where I feel like a lot of people are expecting some type of electric car, some type of electric Audi. But given that Audi's with pretty much Porsche's under Volkswagen, which is Audi, I think that might be the correlation why the 911 was able to be done.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I'm so glad that it's a non-electric vehicle.
Yeah. Yes. I'm glad it's a non-electric vehicle, and because I'm diehard, always have been Porsche guy, you know?
Oh,
that's why I'm
really because you didn't even say Porsche.
Porsche,
yeah,
Porsche.
Ken Block doesn't even say Porsche. Okay,
we had this discussion.
Porsche.
Yeah, it's Porsche, bro. Do you say Hyundai? Do you call BMWs Beamers because they're Beamers?
No.
Beamers are the bike. Dumbass.
It's actually BMW.
What is BM?
That's how you say BMW.
Okay.
Normally.
Fucking 350Z. How far are we going to take this?
So going back to race cars.
Yes.
One thing with this as well, reading up on some of the posts, people are saying like, dude, that's such a sick show car.
Right.
Like I saw so many people commenting.
It's like a show car.
Yeah. So many people commenting like, that's such a sick show car. And then like the reply back to it was like, no, this is a Pikes Peak race car.
Yeah.
One of the most brutal races because of the climb and elevation. If you guys are unaware, your car performing at the base of the mountain at sea level is not going to perform remotely even close to what it's going to do at the very peak.
Yeah.
And that's why these cars are so difficult to create, because not only does the whole aero kit affect how the suspension and the handling is going to handle the
aero,
in the corners.
The aero on this car
is spot on. But also, the air density is not going to be the same. So your car's not going to perform physically, power-wise, the same. And so
completely.
You literally have to build the car to change with the track as it, like, in real time.
Yeah, as it goes. So it's insane. And if you haven't already seen it, we encourage you to see it. You're living under a rock. Don't know what you're doing, but you got to go look at it.
Well, it's on the screen once, at least.
Yeah.
Go look at
it. But look into it more. Don't just take our word for it. Read some shit.
Yeah. Because we could have just BS'd you. Could have
look at the photo. Like, yeah, look at the details. Details. Because that's the thing where it's like, yes, this is a race car. This is built to function. But there's so many details that are so aesthetically pleasing too. Where it's just like that the wing on that full billet wings that it, and the wing is huge. It's absolutely massive. But then just the wing stands where it goes from the wing up there straight down all the way down to the chassis where it's just like it looks so beefy.
I feel like from just a consumer perspective, a lot of cars that are built to like that sort of standard or that degree, like details get overlooked because it's like you're just overwhelmed looking at it. Like you're like, I don't like what is all of this, you know? But it's super, super interesting when you dive into like the actual mechanics and what they're trying out and like testing and all this kind of stuff. But
At the end of the day, huge, huge congratulations to Ken Block, the Hoonigan team, BBI team, everybody who made that happen, because it's just, it's magical. That's not real life stuff. That's fairy things. They flick their little wands around and poof.
I think Hurt, magic. I think Hurt should be the one to take it up Pike's Peak.
Oh my gosh.
Perfect.
That would be broken in 2 seconds, but okay.
He's going to try to drift it. Definitely try to drift it. He's going to be like, why isn't this a GS?
It's going to be a Tesla jump down the side of the hill.
Oh, jeez. Time to make another episode on that.
Let's not.
No.
Yeah.
Well, so that closes things out there. So shall we move into the call-outs?
Your favorite segment.
I think we shall.
The late night call-outs.
Yep. Who are we going to call out next?
Who is Tyler going to go
Tyler,
first?
Tyler, you go first.
Oh, I'm always first.
No, Alex usually is first.
No, Tyler always goes first.
I've been
purposely setting it up that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm always like super excited to tell. And mine is not really going to be an underdog per se this time. And I usually like to shed light on all the dudes out here building ridiculously cool things that do not get enough attention. Whereas I feel like my call out today, he's got enough clout. But I have to recognize something because I feel like a lot of people overlook this one or have been recently. And Ryan Turk, okay, he's a professional professional Formula Drift driver. He's made some amazing builds. His GT4586, whatever it is, his Ferrari BRZ thing that he made was amazing. But the thing I wanted to talk about was his Formula Supra.
Oh, yeah, that thing is...
The Formula Supra that he built was...
Because that has the Judd V10 in it.
That's what I was just going to bring up. A lot of people, I feel like, why is this being slept on? He's got a Judd V10. That is a freaking, what, 90, early 90s, late 90s F1 car engine that that makes 730 horsepower naturally aspirated and revs to 11,000 RPMs. Like, how can we not appreciate
just
that?
Just got to splice in on this. This is a Formula One F1 engine in this car.
It's a screamer. It sounds incredible. It will blow out your eardrums, but it sounds incredible. And the thing in the new Supra, like, it just, it's right.
CHP ain't ready for that exhaust ticket.
They can't give you a ticket when you blow out their eardrums.
Right.
Woo.
Can't give you a ticket. They can't catch you.
That too.
That is that also
too,
true.
Yeah, that too.
But, yeah, Ryan Turk, I know he's already got tons of followers already, but I really, really, I love the Formula Supra.
Yeah.
I thought the Ferrari and the BRZ was cool, but the Formula Supra with the Judd engine just sits right with me, much like the Hoonigan Porsche.
I'm glad you called that out because, like, I didn't even know. And I'm a big, I like Ryan Turk a lot.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, that the stuff put into that car is absolutely insane. Yeah,
I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah. But speaking of, like, loud cars, my call-out's car.
It's real loud. Ooh,
so I'm calling out somebody who has a very insane car, and I'm calling out Riley Starr, or Starr, however you pronounce his last name.
Jeffrey Starr.
Riley Starr. And he is the owner of RS Motorsport. He has his own shop now, but you may have known him from his Trans Am build. And this thing is absolutely insane. The level of work that he's put into this thing, in the chassis, the motor, all the welding he's done on this car, the work he's put in, and just the look of the car too. It looks so menacing, where it's just on the ground, high radius. It's insanely wide. It has a fully built LSX motor, NA, pushing pretty high horsepower, but it revs up insanely high. I think like up to 10,000 or something around that range. And then at first he did a insane 8-to-1 header setup,
which was ridiculous.
And it sounded like you have to go up and look up videos of how this thing sounded with the 8-to-1 header setup, because it was just wild. It revved up so high, and it was just super aggressive. Like, there's one video on the dyno to where I thought, like, it was just going to just destroy the dyno and just, like, go straight. But, yeah, his level of work, insane. He took it to SEMA.
Right.
Last year, he was at the Pit and Paddock booth. Seeing it in person blew my absolute mind, and I am so excited for him to kind of just keep pursuing what he's doing, given that now he has kind of his own shop and he's doing this level of fabrication and work for other people as well. So power to him on that. Another cool fact is he actually won the Hot Wheels Legends Tour, and his Trans Am is actually a Hot Wheels. So you might see his car on the shelf at your stores.
Right.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
But,
incredible. Also, I wanted to talk about a little bit about Riley. As we did, you noted, he's a fellow SEMA boy.
Yep.
But if I'm not mistaken, I think I recall Riley saying that he built this in like his parents' backyard.
Yes.
This is a full true backyard. Yes. I heard. So he was really, this was really like his experience to, much like yours and mine, our endeavor to get into SEMA to put our names out there. This was his big break.
It's very like DIY.
Yeah.
At the fullest, where he had it wasn't even a garage. It was on the side. It was a covered side yard area to where he had the car, the majority of it built himself, just there.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of the stuff that he's built on that car, it was his first time doing stuff like that.
Right.
So
kudos to Ryan.
Power to him. So I'm excited for his future and how more he does, and I want to see that Trans Am rip on the track in person someday.
And so. paving the way for young guns like us.
Yes. So who's your call out, boy?
Surprise, surprise! It is another Karuma member.
Stancy.
If you like Lexuses, you've probably already seen it. Lexi. Same as Genesis.
The Lexis?
Genesi?
Lexi? I don't know.
Okay. Who's your call out?
Hey girl, it's Josh. IS300 wagon, sport cross. Hella rare. He actually drives it. He used to have a sedan that was like crazy, and then he pretty much took that same setup and was like, wagon. Yeah. That was good. That was good.
I have a thing for wagons, so. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. It's like, it just makes me so happy to see it. He had it on Vish News, then it was on, or now it's on some big old Viennas, talking super hard, like fender to lip front. Like I said, like actually drives it, you know? But yeah, super my taste.
I like it.
I love a good wagon.
Big static guy.
Yeah, big static guy.
Yeah.
I don't know why these freaking not just static, but static wagons, they hit somewhere else for me, because it is truly a car that should not be slammed on the ground on bags or anything else remotely because it was meant to haul around kids to soccer practice. Yeah. But you're laying frame and on coilovers, bro. You can't beat it.
IS wagon, where it's like I love the sedan, and the sedan is like so known. I love cars that are so known and people don't know about the wagons as much to where it like.
Well, the wagon only, I don't 100% quote me on this, but I believe only 4,000 were ever sold.
In the U.S.?
Hold on. Talk about something real quick. I can confirm this right now.
There's another wagon car that I may shout out later.
Yeah, 4,000 units.
Like ever?
Total.
That's what it says.
Or in the U.S.?
See, I would need a little bit more time to 100%.
Hold on, pause. Another reason that
we are doing a podcast right now.
But yeah, I know there's it's a limited amount, but it's something cool where it's like the IS wagon, where it's like also the Mitsubishi Evo wagon.
Yeah,
like
that
thing's cool, and just like a lot of stuff Japan only got too. But
I'm surprised we even got the sport cross, to be honest.
Yeah,
like it, granted, that was in still a time period where wagons were. Feasible for companies to make, but it's like one of those cars where you're like, oh, we got this is I don't know if you're a Lexus dude, you know how important that car is. Like that is sick. So props for him to go and
companies need to bring back wagons and shooting brakes.
Yeah. So shout out Josh, shout out Icy Boys, shout out Karuma. That shit's sick. So I think that's gonna wrap it.
Can you guys just sponsor him already? Because he wants to be.
I'm sponsoring y'all. This is free clout right now, or free shout-out, free advertising. I don't do free advertising. I said that multiple times. Anyways, jeez. I think we're going to
end
the podcast. Let's close it out.
So subscribe. Have a good one. Look
hit
into that
sub
pig
button.
Car.
Like, let us know how you like this episode. Let us know if you have any thoughts of potential future stuff that we should look into and possibly do.
Drop some ideas.
And please let us know. Let us know if you want to see us race go-karts and podcast at the same time.
I think we might just have to make that happen regardless if anybody wants.
We don't care what you...
I want to go back to K1. All right. Steven's having a... All right.
Mental breakdown. Okay, bye.
Peace.
Bye.